Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Kathy Lipp. She is a national speaker, and she's the author of 17 books. And she and her husband live in San Jose, and with Sherry Gregory, they have written a book called Overwhelmed, How to Quiet the Chaos and Restore Your Sanity. Kathy, welcome to Life Quest.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Why this book at this time?
Well, I went through quite an overwhelming time in my life, I would say probably about 7 years ago. And I kept careful notes on that and was kind of able to, with a lot of prayer and a lot of support, find my way back. And Sherry, who's a good friend of mine, was keeping notes at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And said, you know what, I learned a lot from watching you during that. I think that we'd have a lot to share in a book. And so, I've been very purposeful in my ministry talking about clutter and, you know, getting rid of physical clutter in our house, but this just seemed like the next natural progression of getting rid of the emotional and mental and spiritual clutter that so many of us carry.
There seems to be so much going on, not just in our own lives, and if we have children with children and financial health, what's happening in the world. And in fact, I tell you, we'll talk a little later about the concept of the Sabbath, but I just don't want to hear the news anymore. And, and I've been a news junkie for decades, but now I just don't want to know because I can't do anything about it anyway. So.
Yeah, and it is overwhelming. And, you know, as citizens, there are small things we can do, but a lot of it, the only thing we can do is pray through the news.
Right.
And I mean, well, that sounds very defeating. I know it's a very powerful stance we can have. But I also believe in moderation when, you know, especially through this past election, it just tore so many of us apart. And to be able to say, how can I live a life where I'm not inviting the overwhelm, but when the overwhelm comes, I can fight my way back to peace.
Later on in your book, you talk about having to just deal maybe with people who are relatives or close friends, and they'll have these strong statements, and their whole life revolves around some of these things.
It's so true. And, you know, when people become hyper-focused on something, it's very hard for them to be in relationship.
Yeah.
And so, one of the chapters that almost everybody talks to me about is, I took a year off of a family member.
Yes.
And, you know, I didn't announce to the world, I hate this person, they are banished from my life, but I just made sure I was not in social situations. Now, this is not one of my kids or my parents or my husband or anything like that, but this was just somebody that every time I was in the same space with them, it did damage. And so to take a year and to find out what was my part of that, and also what boundaries did I need to put in place. And it wasn't quite a year because we had a graduation that both of us needed to attend for a family member that we both love. But it was a great time of purposeful withdrawal and reflection, and it really did help me quite a bit.
It's taken me a long time to realize that I have choices, that I can not choose to be close or regularly with someone who is hurtful or just makes me nervous. And I know some people take break from Facebook because of the anonymity, sort of, or the distance, which seems to allow people to be not very nice.
Hideous, horrible, it's amazing what a screen will do to make us feel protected, but we forget that there are real people on the other side of that.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that Facebook can be a beautiful tool for keeping up with people, but it has to be used responsibly and with the realization that my words matter. But I love that Facebook has said, and you can limit what posts you see. There are a lot of people who still think we're friends, but I never see their posts because I've said, you know what, I'm not going to follow that person anymore.
Yeah, and you just said something I think is very important in general, and that is that words words matter. There's no delete button once something has been said by us or to us.
It's so true.
And, you know, that's how, and this is whether it's Facebook or face-to-face, and apologies don't always help.
Yeah. You know, there are certain relationships that we need to work on restoration.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others where we need to work on boundaries. And there are most of our relationships we need to work on both. But the Bible says, you know, New Testament says, be at peace as far as is
as possible. Yeah.
Yeah, as far as is possible. And so you can, I don't believe that that means to be a doormat. And oftentimes peace means we're not in the same room anymore. And I for some people that's very hard to hear, but there are people who are toxic and they are not, I don't believe that God has given us responsibility for everybody in the world, but we've got responsibility for certain people in our
sure.
lives until God's released us from that.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that we have to work on the boundaries and the restoration with.
In part one of your book, Overwhelmed, you have straight away, I was surprised, usually this ends up at the end of people's books, of self-assessment.
Right.
And talk to our listeners about that.
Yeah, we wanted you to go into the book knowing that not every overwhelmed is equal, but every overwhelmed feels overwhelming, and that you don't need to work on everything in this book. There are certain kinds of overwhelmed that you need to work on. And, you know, for me, it's not that I have too many projects going on. It's I have too many unfinished projects going on.
Yes.
That's where I can get into trouble. And so knowing that I need to close the loop on some of those things. For some people, it's overwhelming relationships. You know, for some people, now, we have to be very, very clear that there are people who have, their lives are just more overwhelming than some of the rest of us. I have a very good friend. She's a mom of a special needs child. And, you know, it's like comparing my day to hers is like comparing apples to pandas.
Gotcha.
You know, it's there's no comparison.
Yeah.
So she's had to really, really choose what she allows into her life and what she's allowed to be overwhelmed with. And because she already has an overwhelming situation taking up her life. So we give this assessment to say, what is it that's overwhelming you? And focus on these tools in the book to help you.
And in chapter one, you go back to something I think is very important, and that's, how did I get here? You know, where did this come from? And one definition doesn't fit all.
Yeah, and so what we've kind of figured out, I remember emailing this to Sherry in the midst of the book. I said, I really believe that a lot of overwhelm is decision fatigue.
Mm.
It's just having to make decision after decision after decision. And I'm sure that this has not changed through the ages. There have always been decisions that had to be made.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that, well, life was definitely harder for most people, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago. It may have also been simpler. That doesn't mean it was easier.
I see.
But there were probably less daily decisions that had to be made. The daily routines were pretty routine.
Mm-hmm.
And now, we, my husband always says that in our business of writing and speaking, it's our job to manage the opportunities that are given to us.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really apt statement for most of our lives. There are lots of opportunities, and we can't take advantage of them all. So we need to be making these decisions all of the time.
Sometimes we find ourselves making really very life-important decisions at the wrong times.
Yeah, oh, for sure. You know, we had to take a decision sabbatical in January, any big life-changing decisions, because my husband's father passed away.
Yeah.
And that is not the time to be making decisions. Another time not to be making decisions, you get a big unexpected tax refund.
Sure.
That is not a good time to be making
yeah.
decisions. It's a good time to be thinking about it, to be praying about it, but when we're at the high highs or the low lows, or maybe, you know, I always told Roger when we first got married, Never let me get too tired, too hot, or too hungry. And if all three happen at the same time, may God have mercy on your soul.
It's a tsunami.
Yeah, it's a tsunami. And so if I'm too tired or I haven't eaten since breakfast, I'm in no shape to be making good decisions. Yeah. And it's good to know that about yourself.
Yeah. You say we need to keep from saying yes to things we should say no to. In general in life, and probably with people, too.
Yeah, you know, I think that we are actually supposed to say yes to very little. We're supposed to say yes to things that God has called us to and do them really, really well. But I think oftentimes we're giving a yes because we're in an uncomfortable position or we're a people pleaser or if I don't do it, you know, we've got the martyr complex. If I don't do it, nobody else will. Well, that's rarely the case.
Yeah.
And so really looking at those decisions and saying, and there are sometimes, I think about church. You know, there are ministries that I'm called to.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are ministries that they need a warm body.
Yes.
And so I try to put most of my time into the things that I'm called to.
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while, I need to be that warm body as well. But if all I'm doing is being the warm body, then one, I'm taking, you know, I'm not letting the church really represent their needs,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not acting in my gifts. And we're both going to get tired of that pretty quickly.
Have you come to the place where you realize you don't have to answer everybody's question?
Oh, it's so hard, isn't it?
It is.
It is so hard.
I'm so used to giving answers. And if somebody
right.
asks me a personal question, and they will, then my obligation, I feel, is to answer that, and I've finally learned after many, many decades, I don't have to do that.
Right. You know, there are some things that people don't have a right to know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, and then I love what my co-author did recently. You know, as authors, we get asked to endorse books or promote things
right.
all the time. And she said, you know what, if this is something that has to be done before May 31st, then my automatic answer has to be no. And I love that. There's no judgment in that. It's not saying you're not worthy of supporting.
Right.
It's saying if it needs to be done in the next 5 weeks, then the answer has to be no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is a brilliant way of saying, you know what, I'm protecting the things that I've already said yes to. And if there's something that comes along that's important enough for you to consider changing your yes to a no on something, then that's something you can consider. But if it's just another thing that's being added to your list, then it's an automatic no.
In chapter 7, you talk about dealing with past failures and coming to peace with them. Sometimes we're asking forgiveness for things we've asked forgiveness of for 20 years. And to many people, whether it's a divorce, a moral failure, or whether it's a financial misdirection, that defines their life.
Yeah, and I'm amazed. You know, I'm not somebody who tends to live in past regrets. I have many other failings that we could go on for hours about here. That's not one thing I tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain key areas of my life that every once in a while, you know, had you been a better mom, maybe
yeah.
that wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I have to constantly remind myself of is regret does nothing but detract from today, and it detracts from my ability to minister and to love well. And so the only choices I get to make, I think sometimes we feel like if we don't stay in regret, we haven't mourned it deeply enough.
Exactly.
We have. And you know what? I would say have a funeral, mourn it, write it out, do what you need to do about those past decisions,
mm-hmm.
but then get on with your life because you have so much control over where you go from here.
Yeah.
And staying stuck in regret, you're giving your power for the future away to your past, and that benefits nobody.
And Kathy, I look back at my age now. I'm retired, but I look back to when I was a young pastor, and I really could have done so much better in some of those little churches I was at first. And then, you know, someone once said, "Look, that's who you were then," and
yeah.
you're different now.
Well, and the thing is, you know, Dwight, you, God was not surprised by who you were in that church at that time.
Very good.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he can use our weaknesses, our failings, all of that. And I know that you know that. But it's so easy to free other people from their guilt mm-hmm. and hang tightly to your own.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we all could have done better, and that's why grown-ups do better than kids oftentimes.
That's interesting.
It's the grown-ups who choose to learn. And, you know, we are able to do this now in a new and different way. And that's why we have wisdom.
Yeah.
Young people can be smart, they can be brilliant, but they don't have the wisdom that comes with the mistakes that we've made and we've learned from.
After I'd been several years at a church in Portland, Oregon, I remember an elderly lady at camp meeting said to me at one point, "You're a lot more huggable than you were when you first came here." And I thought that was progress on my part.
That is huge progress. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's what our goal is, right? We want to
yeah.
leave something better than when we came. And we want to leave better than when we came. That's growth and wisdom.
In chapter 10, you title it, "Just Clear Your Calendar Versus Creating a Calendar That Works for You." And then you write, "Live off your calendar, not your to-do list." Would you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, now let me be honest. I have a list of things that need to get done, absolutely.
Right.
But I don't work off of that list. What I do is I take things on those lists and I schedule it to my calendar. Because if I do not block off the time to work on project A, B, and C,
mm-hmm.
what I'm telling myself is I can fit that in after work. I can fit that in between meetings. There's no fitting in. You have to block off the time to do the projects that you feel are important. And here's the brilliant part of that living off your calendar. You start to realize there are some things that really aren't that important to get done.
Yeah.
And so if you never are making time for it, it means that it's not important enough to you to get done.
Right.
Instead of staying on that to-do list, you can figure out, how do I not do this, or do I get to decide this isn't important?
Our time is going quickly. I want to talk yeah. about resting in Sabbath restoration. I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. I grew up in a
yes.
Sabbath-keeping home. At the same time, that has evolved in what the Sabbath means to me, from the
right.
"you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that,"
right.
to the emotional, spiritual, yes, even physical rest that
yes.
that needs to happen. Talk about that a little bit from your book.
Well, and one of my favorite, and I'm going to butcher this quote,
uh-huh.
I promise you, but one of my favorite sayings about Sabbath is from the Seventh-day Adventist, that we need to spend our week preparing for Sabbath instead of spending our
yeah.
Sabbath preparing for our week.
Right.
And boy, I just have to tell you, that changed all my thinking on this because it's so true. You know, if I look, that is not the day I'm going to accomplish anything except to be with God and be with my family
right.
and potentially my friends, then it's amazing how much more selective I am about what I do during the week, how I curate my calendar so that it's only the important stuff that gets on there. And that I can rest. I can really rest. You know, it's so interesting. I remember one time looking at my husband. We were just starting to really adapt Sabbath, and neither of us really grew up with a strong Sabbath in our lives.
Uh-huh.
And we have nothing we have to do. And we didn't know what to do with ourselves.
I see.
Have nothing we have to do. But, you know, it goes very quickly to, well, how can we spend this time together? How can we lean into each other?
Sure.
How can we lean into what God has for us? And instead of trying to get done with church really quickly, we linger now. And it's a beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
I look so forward to best day of my week.
The book is Overwhelmed, How to Quiet the Chaos and Restore Your Sanity, Kathy Lipp and Sherry Gregory. It's a Harvest House publication. Kathy, where can our listeners get a copy of your book?
You know, it's available at all Christian bookstores, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon.com.
Fantastic. Kathy, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you enjoyed the book.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.